Right now, I mean, literally as we speak, there are massive global corporations spending tens of millions of dollars on AI-powered self-driving robotic
Oh,
trucks.
absolutely. The budgets are staggering.
Yeah, we're talking about state-of-the-art computer vision, LiDAR arrays, autonomous driving models trained on literal supercomputers.
Right.
And this is the crazy part. These executives are taking these incredibly advanced machines and just dropping them into distribution yards that still run exclusively on handwritten sticky notes.
Sticky notes, static-filled walkie-talkies, and I mean, you can't make this up, 1980s era carbon copy paper.
It's just wild. It's like buying this, state-of-the-art self-driving sports car, but the only road you have to drive it on is this muddy, unmapped dirt path just filled with potholes.
That's a perfect analogy, and really is this profound, almost comical disconnect between ambition and reality. You have 21st century silicon and software, and it's being forced to navigate a physical workflow that honestly hasn't fundamentally changed since the Reagan administration.
And that is the exact paradox we're unpacking today. So, welcome to the deep dive. We are looking at the global supply chain, but specifically for you listening, we're zooming in on the yards.
Yeah, those massive, sprawling industrial lots.
Right, the places where semi trucks drop off and pick up the goods that essentially keep the entire global economy running. And the grounding text we have for you today is this really fascinating public research paper published in July 2026 by Yardflow.
Right, titled The Order of Operations for Autonomous Yards.
Exactly. And our mission today is to explore this deeply counterintuitive idea, basically, that true automation doesn't actually start with hardware.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't start with buying a robot. It starts with the human driver and the incredibly unglamorous yet economically vital mechanics of paper workflows.
Because if you don't start there, I mean, you just don't get automation. What the Yardflow research lays out is this blueprint for what they call deterministic production capacity.
Deterministic production capacity.
Okay. Yeah, it's basically an exploration of how you have to sequence a physical operation so that technology actually compounds your efficiency. Because if you do this in the wrong order, like if you just buy the robot first, you just end up buying a very expensive, very confused participant in a completely broken process.
And to really understand why companies are making this mistake over and over, we kind of have to look at the sheer desperation in the market right now.
Oh, the desperation is palpable.
Yeah. The paper brings in some really sobering data from the C3 Solutions 2026 State of Dock and Yard Management report. They surveyed supply chain and logistics professionals, so, the people actually running these massive distribution networks.
Right.
And the numbers just reveal this massive gap between desire and reality. Almost three quarters of these professionals, I think it was 72.7%, say they are actively exploring yard automation in the next 1 to 2 years.
Which sounds great, right? Until you see the critical follow-up data point, which is that only 12.9% of them actually have a plan for implementation.
Wait, really? Just under 13%?
Yeah, and incredibly, that percentage of people with a formal plan actually decreased from the previous year.
Oh, wow.
So you have this market that is just utterly desperate for the technology, but structurally completely lost on how to actually deploy it.
Which, I mean, it makes sense when you look at their primary complaint in that same survey. Over 40% of those exact same professionals cite inefficient manual processes as their number one operational challenge.
Right.
So they know their baseline human workflows are a disaster, but they're still reaching for like multi-million-dollar robotics as the magic bullet to fix it.
And that behavior, as illogical as it sounds, is actually a very predictable response to operational stress.
How so?
Well, when you analyze how supply chains handle spikes in volume or severe bottlenecks, there's this clear escalation of panic. First, management reaches for overtime. They ask their existing workforce to stay longer, work harder, skip breaks.
Right, just squeeze the existing system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And when that inevitably burns people out, they reach for temporary labor. They throw more untrained bodies at the problem. But human capital eventually caps out. I mean, the physical friction of just having too many people in a disorganized space becomes counterproductive.
Yeah, people bumping into each other.
Right. And it's only at that absolute peak of operational pain that they look at their bleeding, chaotic yard and think, ah, a robot will fix this.
But a robot doesn't fix a broken yard. A robot just inherits it.
Perfectly said.
And to understand what it's inheriting, we need to walk you through what the paper calls the human API. This is the legacy workflow that basically governs these facilities today.
And it is brutal.
It really is. If you're listening and you've never driven an 18-wheeler, the sheer friction of this process is hard to even believe. So let's put you in the cab of a truck for a second. You've just driven 500 miles. You pull up to a massive distribution center. What happens? Well, you park at a gate and you wait. You wait for a human guard to notice you or finish with the truck in front of you. You roll down your window, and over the roar of, like, idling diesel engines, you try to identify yourself and your load.
Often over a two-way radio that is essentially just a static generator.
Mm-hmm.
Or by handing over this crumpled piece of paper that's been sitting on your dashboard all day.
Exactly. And then the guard takes that information and manually cross-references it against a printed lookup sheet or like some isolated computer terminal. If everything matches, and that's a big if the guard gives you instructions.
Right.
This might be verbal or it might be literally a handwritten note on a sticky pad. They tell you to take your trailer to a specific spot in this massive multi-acre lot. So you drive in, you hunt for the spot, you drop your trailer.
Which takes time.
A lot of time. Then you have to find the new trailer you're supposed to pick up, you hook it up, but you aren't done. You have to secure your truck, step out of the cab, and physically walk across an active, highly dangerous industrial yard filled with moving machinery.
And this is where the real bottleneck begins. Because you are walking into the dock office. You have to wait in line behind a bunch of other drivers. You have to present seal numbers, verify the load, and then physically wet sign this massive stack of carbon copy paperwork.
Yeah.
You take your copies, you leave copies for the receiver, you walk all the way back to your truck, you drive to the outbound gate, you wait in another line, someone manually checks your paperwork again, and then finally you exit.
So, wait, you're telling me that in 2026, the global supply chain, the exact same thing that gets next day delivery to my door, relies on a driver wandering around a lot looking for a specific trailer based on a handwritten sticky note?
Yes. Every single step in that chain requires a human being to stop what they are doing, interpret information from another human being, and make a decision based on memory, local tribal knowledge, or a clipboard.
It's just wild. We're talking about a system that utilizes advanced algorithms to optimize oceanic shipping routes, right? And GPS telematics to track trucks down to the foot on the highway. But the moment that truck pulls into a physical yard, the entire system just regresses 50 years.
And that is the exact physical environment into which executives want to drop autonomous vehicles. You really have to ask yourself, how does a machine vision model, no matter how sophisticated it is, interpret the emotional nuance of a frustrated guard?
It doesn't.
Right. How does a robotic spotter truck read a wet signed piece of paper? It can't. The most advanced autonomous trucking programs, the ones funded by billions in venture capital, they're engineered against hundreds of thousands of edge cases on the highway. But they deliberately avoid the yards. The yards are where deterministic plans go to get mugged by reality.
I love that phrase from the paper, mugged by reality, because if the inputs aren't deterministic, meaning if the data isn't guaranteed, structured, and machine readable, the machine simply freezes, right? Like if you have a computer vision camera on an autonomous yard truck and it encounters a trailer that was parked, say, 3 feet over the painted line because a human driver was in a rush, the robot doesn't have the tribal knowledge to say, oh, that's just Jim. He always parks poorly.
Right. It doesn't know Jim.
Your robot flags it as a critical obstacle and just stops.
Precisely. And this isn't just some theoretical warning. We have a literal graveyard of multi-billion dollar corporate mistakes that prove exactly what happens when you try to force automation onto an unstandardized, chaotic process.
Yeah, let's talk about those.
The yard flow research points to an engineering concept called the automate last law. And to understand why it's a law, we really need to examine the cautionary tales of companies that tried to automate first.
So let's start with arguably the most famous public example of this trap, Tesla, back in 2018, during the launch of the Model 3. Elon Musk famously promised what he called the alien dreadnought. It was supposed to be a factory so advanced, so densely packed with robotics, that it would literally look alien to a traditional manufacturer. He wanted machines doing absolutely everything.
And the result was what Musk himself later termed production hell.
Mm.
What happened mechanically on that assembly line is just fascinating. They tried to automate incredibly nuanced physical tasks before they had simplified the tasks themselves.
What's an example of that?
Well, for example, they tried to use robots to place fiberglass mats on battery packs. But fiberglass is flexible, right? It bends, it flops, it doesn't behave deterministically. Humans can naturally adjust their grip to handle a floppy piece of material. A robot programmed for rigid spatial coordinates cannot.
So it just fails.
Constantly. The robots were constantly failing, dropping materials, and halting the entire line.
And Musk eventually had to admit, I think it was on Twitter at the time, that excessive automation was a mistake, and he famously concluded that humans are underrated. He literally had to rip millions of dollars worth of robotics out of the Fremont factory and replace them with human workers just to get the cars moving out the door. He scaled the chaos. Because if you have a poorly designed process, a robot doesn't fix it. It just executes that poor process at an exponentially faster rate until the whole system crashes.
And we saw that exact same phenomenon happen in the grocery sector, which, as we know, operates on incredibly thin margins anyway. Look at Kroger and their partnership with Ocado around 2025.
Right.
Kroger committed to building these massive, highly automated customer fulfillment centers. They often call them sheds. And they were engineering marvels inside. Grids of robots zooming around, picking groceries with incredible speed.
But the financial outcome was disastrous.
Complete disaster.
Yeah, Kroger ended up taking a roughly $2.6 billion impairment charge to close three of these automated centers. And they reportedly had to pay Ocado around $350 million just to back out of the broader agreement. They basically bet the future of their e-commerce fulfillment on robotics, and it completely failed to meet financial expectations.
And the failure wasn't necessarily that the robots couldn't pick a tomato, you know.
Right.
The failure was a lack of network integration. You can build this incredible billion-dollar showcase facility, but if the underlying operating model doesn't seamlessly connect with the rest of your supply chain, like if the inbound freight arriving at the yard and the outbound delivery vans aren't synchronized with the speed of the robots inside, that automated shed just becomes an isolated island.
It just creates bottlenecks at its edges.
Exactly. You can't just drop a high-tech node into a low-tech network and expect it to scale.
And we saw the exact same thing with Adidas and their speed factories back in 2019. They built these highly automated, futuristic shoe manufacturing plants in Germany and Atlanta. The whole idea was to automate knitting and cutting so they could bring manufacturing closer to the consumer and react instantly to trends.
But they had to shut them both down.
Right, because the broader supply chain, the raw materials coming in, the integration with their global product lines, it just couldn't adapt to the microfactory model. The automation worked in a vacuum, sure, but the process surrounding it was way too complex.
And if we look even further back to the dot-com boom, Webvan is the ultimate cautionary tale of capital preceding the operating model.
Oh, Webvan.
And in 2001, they burned through over $800 million. They committed to building 26 highly automated distribution centers before they had even validated that a single center could achieve profitable unit economics.
Wow.
They scaled the capital expenditure of automation before they had standardized the workflow. 18 months after their IPO, they were bankrupt.
It's a brutal historical pattern. Automated does not equal scalable. Buying a robot gives you a great photo op for a press release, but it doesn't fix your enterprise. Which really brings us to the core thesis of the Yardflow research. If you shouldn't buy the robot first, what is the actual sequential formula for fixing this?
Well, the paper bases its methodology on an engineering algorithm that Elon Musk developed after surviving that Tesla production hell.
Okay.
It's a strict five-step sequence. Step one, question every single requirement. Step two, delete any part or process that you possibly can. Step three, simplify what remains. Step four, accelerate the simplified process. And only then, step five, automate. Automation must be the absolute final step.
It's an engineering law, automate last. And Yardflow basically takes this broad philosophy and translates it into a highly specific five-step order of operations, specifically for the supply chain yard.
Yep.
The sequence goes audit, optimize, orchestrate, standardize, and automate.
And to really grasp this, we need to define those steps within the physical reality of the yard.
Hmm.
So first, you must audit. This doesn't mean sitting in a boardroom reading the corporate standard operating procedure manual.
Right.
It means physically standing in the yard and mapping the true workflow. If the guard is using a walkie-talkie to tell a spotter to move a trailer, you map the walkie-talkie. If a driver is waiting 45 minutes for a wet signature, you document that wait.
You map the reality, not the theory.
Exactly. Then step two, optimize. This means taking those messy human-dependent handoffs and digitizing them. You have to feed the downstream systems clean, structured data. Step three is orchestrate. Once you have clean data, you let your yard management system, your YMS software, actually dictate the movement of assets.
Makes sense.
Step four is standardize. You take this optimized orchestrated protocol and you deploy it identically across your entire network, whether the facility is in Ohio, Texas, or California.
And then finally, step five, automate. Because by the time you reach step five, you've eliminated the clipboards, you've eliminated the radio static, and you have created a clean, deterministic digital runway. When you introduce the autonomous yard truck now, it knows exactly what to do because the data environment is pristine.
Exactly. So the critical question becomes, how do we actually execute step two? How do we optimize? Where does the physical digitization of the yard actually begin?
Well, according to the research, it begins the exact second the truck pulls off the highway and approaches the gate. The driver journey is the very first automation layer. If you don't digitize the front door, the rest of the facility will fail.
And this represents a massive paradigm shift for supply chain executives. The autonomous yard does not begin when a robotic spotter truck moves an empty trailer. It begins when a human driver arrives. The human driver's journey is the first machine-readable workflow. We have to take all of that unstructured human noise, the yelling over the radio, the scribbling on a clipboard, and convert it into structured digital events.
We need discrete data points. Arrival time, facility instruction, legal signature, seal capture, exit time. If a machine can read those discrete events, the machine knows the exact state of the yard in real time.
And to achieve this, YardFlow outlines a protocol they call Flow Driver. And honestly, the genius of this approach is how aggressively unglamorous it is. It's essentially an appless QR check-in operated entirely from the driver's personal smartphone.
I really want to pause on that phrase, appless, because I think that is the secret sauce here.
Oh, completely.
The paper specifically states that boring on purpose is the compliment. Let's think about the psychology of a long-haul truck driver. These men and women are independent operators or fleet drivers moving freight across multiple states. Over the course of a month, a single driver might visit 30 different facilities owned by 30 different corporations.
And historically, every single one of those software-obsessed corporations has tried to force that driver to download their specific proprietary app.
Exactly. And it's infuriating. I mean, imagine if every time you went to a new grocery store, you had to download an app, create an account, verify your email, remember a password, and navigate some clunky user interface just to walk through the front doors.
You'd never go.
You'd hate it. Drivers experience severe app fatigue. They will actively resist it. They don't want a flashy software suite. They just want a digital green light so they can drop their freight and leave.
That is why the appless QR code is so effective. The driver pulls up to the gate. There's no guard to talk to, no clipboard to sign. They simply roll down their window, scan a large QR code with their native phone camera, and a secure web link opens.
Just like a restaurant menu.
Right, exactly. They input their load number, and the facility-specific instructions, like where to park, which dock door to back into, are sent directly to them via an automated SMS text message.
It's the exact same frictionless workflow as checking into a commercial flight today. I mean, you don't stand in the ticketing line to talk to an agent anymore. You don't even use the physical kiosk half the time. You get a text message, you click a link, your digital boarding pass is on your screen, and you walk straight to security. It is boring, it is invisible, and it works flawlessly.
But the implications for the facility are profound. From the enterprise perspective, structuring that gate check-in means the yard immediately knows with absolute digital certainty who arrived, what load they are carrying, exactly what time their tires crossed the threshold, and exactly which dock door they were instructed to go to. You are taking analog variance and converting it into digital truth.
You're billing the runway. Because if the digital system knows that truck 123 is securely backed into dock door 4, and the system captures a digital timestamp the second that trailer is unloaded, a robotic spotter truck can be automatically dispatched to move it away.
Right. No one had to look out a window. No one had to call it in on a walkie-talkie. The digital event triggered the physical automation.
But getting the driver through the gate with a text message only solves half the problem, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Because once that truck is parked at the dock, we run into the most intractable physical bottleneck in the entire global supply chain. And it is sitting on a clipboard inside the facility.
We really need to spend some serious time here because this is the absolute core focus of the YardFlow thesis. Getting the driver out of the guard shack is great, But the real friction happens when they have to walk into the doc office to handle the BOL.
The BOL.
Yeah, we need to demystify what the BOL is, and we need to explore what the paper calls the boring economics of paper math. Because this is where the savings scale into the millions.
Okay, so let's break this down for you guys listening. The BOL stands for the Bill of Lading. It is the paper heartbeat of modern commerce. And honestly, outside of supply chain professionals, it's arguably the most misunderstood document in the world.
Oh, without a doubt. If you had asked most people yesterday what a bill of lading was, they'd probably say it's a receipt. Or maybe an invoice.
Mm.
Just basic administrative hygiene.
Right. But the paper cites the legal definition from the NMFTA, the National Motor Freight Traffic Association.
Mm.
And they make it explicitly clear that the BOL is not just a receipt. It serves three critical legal functions.
Okay. What are they?
One, it is a receipt for the goods shipped. Two, it is a legally binding contract of carriage between the shipper and the transportation company. And three, and this is crucial, it is a document of title.
That third point is everything. A document of title.
What does that actually mean in practice?
It means that whoever legally holds that document essentially holds ownership or liability for the goods while they're in transit. Imagine a truck carrying, say, $500,000 worth of pharmaceuticals or high-end electronics.
Okay.
If that truck gets into a highway accident, or if the receiver claims the goods arrived damaged, the legal liability hinges entirely on the chain of custody documented on the BOL. When did the driver sign for it? Did they note any damages upon pickup? What time was it handed over?
Wow. Okay. Because it carries such immense legal and financial weight, the supply chain has basically built this absolute fortress of physical paper around it just to guarantee that custody chain. We need to break down the exact math of the status quo workflow today because the volume of paper generated is staggering.
Let's look at a single standard shipment. To contain all the necessary legal clauses, hazmat data, routing instructions, and signature lines, a standard bill of lading is roughly 3 pages long.
Okay, 3 pages. I mean, that doesn't sound too bad.
But because it's a document of title, every single party involved in the transaction needs their own legally verifiable, wet-signed proof of custody. So you need exact copies of that 3-page document.
Oh, I see.
Historically, this was done with carbon paper. You know, you press hard with a pen and it bleeds through to the copies below. Today, it's mostly done through brute force physical printing.
So who gets the copies?
The shipper, the facility sending the goods, needs a copy to prove they handed it over to the driver. The carrier, the trucking company, needs a copy to stay in the cab with the driver as legal proof they're authorized to transport the load. And the receiver, the destination facility, needs a copy to prove they accepted delivery.
So here is the exact math of the legacy workflow. A 3-page document multiplied by 3 exact copies for the 3 parties involved. That equals 9 total pages of physical paper generated and printed for every single truck that backs into a dock. 9 pages per shipment.
It's unbelievable. If a facility processes 100 trucks a day,
yeah,
that is 900 pages of legal documents printed, signed, sorted, and filed every single day.
And now enter the YardFlow solution, which they call Flow BOL. They are targeting the digitization of this custody transfer. But importantly, following that engineering principle of simplifying before automating, they don't try to boil the ocean and digitize the entire legal framework across all 3 parties overnight.
No, they use a starting wedge.
Right. They begin by simply eliminating the need for the shipper's physical paper copy altogether.
So under the Flow BOL protocol, the system captures the driver's signature digitally, perhaps on a mounted tablet at the dock or on their phone. The shipper immediately retains a pristine, time-stamped digital record of the custody transfer, eliminating their need to print and store a physical copy in a filing cabinet.
Okay. And look at how that changes the math. By removing the shipper's 3-page copy, the total amount of physical paper generated per shipment drops from 9 pages down to 6 pages.
Right.
Okay, I have to play the skeptic here. We are doing a deep dive into the future of autonomous supply chains, and the grand technological solution is that we drop from 9 printed pages to 6 printed pages. We save 3 pieces of printer paper. If I am a supply chain executive, am I really supposed to take this to my board of directors? Like, great news, everyone. We revolutionized the yard. We save 3 sheets of paper per truck. It sounds almost comically minor.
I know, it does sound minor. Right up until you apply the physics of enterprise scale. This is where YardFlow outlines what they call the conservative direct paper model. When you run the exact calculation, the boring economics of saving 3 pages actually transforms into massive corporate savings.
Walk me through the math on that. Let's see how 3 pages turn into real money.
Okay, so they start with the absolute floor of direct costs. They estimate the raw material cost of the paper itself, the printer ink, and the amortized maintenance of the industrial printers at just 5 cents per page.
Huh.
It's an incredibly conservative estimate.
Yeah, very conservative.
So if you save 3 pages by eliminating the shipper's copy, you're saving exactly 15 cents per shipment.
Still sounds like couch change, 15 cents a truck.
But let's scale it up to a typical enterprise network. Let's take a single, moderately busy distribution facility. They process 250 outbound shipments a day. They operate roughly 260 days a year. And let's assume this enterprise has a network of 24 of these sites operating across the country.
Okay, let's crunch that. 15 cents saved multiplied by 250 shipments a day. That is $37.50 saved per day per site. Multiply that by 260 operating days. That's $9,750 a year per site. Now multiply that by the 24 sites in the network.
That tiny 15 cents compounds into 4.68 million individual pages of paper avoided across the network annually. And in raw direct material costs, it equates to $234,000 saved per year.
Wow.
Nearly $250,000 in direct savings, entirely generated by eliminating 3 pieces of paper from the workflow.
$250,000, just on paper, toner, and printer leases. That is staggering. But the paper emphasizes that this $234,000 is literally just the floor. That is the absolute cheapest part of the equation. Because the true cost of those 3 pages isn't the 5 cents of physical material. The real cost is what the Yardflow analysts brilliantly term the handling tax.
Yes. This is the most critical concept in understanding legacy workflows, the handling tax. As the paper states, a printed document is not just a record of information. A physical document is latency with a staple in it.
Latency with a staple in it. That's so good.
Right. Think about the human labor hours required to manage those 4.68 million pages of shipper copies.
Let's trace the life of one of those pages. A clerk has to hit print. They have to physically walk to the printer. They have to collate the 9 pages. They have to staple the shipper's 3-page copy. They have to wait for the driver to walk into the office. They have to physically hand the pen to the driver for a wet signature.
It's exhausting just thinking about it.
And then the clerk has to take the signed shipper's copy, walk over to a physical filing cabinet, alphabetize it by carrier or date, and shove it in a folder.
And that is just the day-to-day handling tax. The real financial hemorrhage occurs when there is a dispute.
Right.
Let's say 3 months after a shipment, a carrier files a detention claim, arguing that their driver was held up in your yard for 4 unpaid hours and they want to be compensated.
Right.
Or a receiver files a claim for missing freight. Or there is a sudden federal safety audit.
Oh boy. Under the 9-page legacy workflow, a human being now has to walk into a back room filled with metal filing cabinets. They have to dig through thousands of pages of paper to hunt down one specific wet signed document from 3 months ago.
Assuming it was even filed correctly.
Exactly. They had to pull it out, verify the scribbled timestamp, take it to a scanner, digitize it, and email it to the legal or accounting department. The labor cost, the time delay, and the sheer friction of that retrieval process completely dwarf the 5-cent cost of the paper itself.
Absolutely. The handling tax is an invisible drain on the entire organization.
Mm-hmm.
But when you implement the FlowBL protocol, when you transition to a digital custody transfer and eliminate the shipper's paper copy, you completely eradicate that tax.
Because it's already digital.
Right. The enterprise gains access to clean, timestamped, universally searchable data. If there is an audit 3 months later, an administrator simply types in a purchase order number and the exact digital document appears on their screen instantly. It features a cryptographically verified signature and an exact down to the second timestamp of when the custody transfer occurred.
And this really clarifies why the drop from 9 pages to 6 pages is such a vital strategic wedge. It is not just about saving $234,000 on ink. It's an immediate, highly measurable financial win that simultaneously upgrades the data infrastructure of the entire supply chain. You are taking dead physical paper files and transforming them into active structured custody data,
which creates a profound operational ripple effect. When you eliminate that handling tax, when you get rid of those 3 pages, you don't just optimize the back office. You organically, almost accidentally, solve 2 of the biggest, most expensive, and most scrutinized issues in the modern corporate landscape: sustainability and driver experience.
Okay, let's talk about that ripple effect, because it is fascinating how deeply interconnected these physical processes are. Let's look back at that C3 Solutions survey data from earlier. 95.7% of surveyed supply chain professionals state that they care about sustainability. and 87.1% say they care about the driver experience.
But historically, how do corporations actually address these issues?
Usually, a sustainability program is just an abstract reporting exercise for shareholders. They buy carbon offsets and publish a glossy PDF report. Or a driver experience program consists of putting a nicer coffee machine in the break room and, I don't know, handing out branded hats.
ESG confetti. That is the term Yardflow uses for those superficial programs, and it is lethally accurate. But what the research argues is that if you actually want to move the needle on environmental impact and driver retention, they are not abstract concepts. They are operational physics. They are solved by the exact same workflow optimization.
Okay, let's trace the physical mechanics of this flywheel. If you implement FlowDriver at the gate, the app is QR check-in, and you implement FlowBO at the dock, reducing the paper burden from 9 pages to 6, what physically changes in the yard, you drastically reduce manual handoffs. The driver no longer has to park their rig, turn off the engine, physically walk across the dangerous yard, wait in line in a cramped dock office, manually sign 9 pages of paper, and then walk back. You have removed massive amounts of physical waiting from the process. And in the supply chain, less waiting physically translates to less truck idling.
And this is where the sustainability metrics become real and measurable.
Yeah.
Less idling directly translates to reduced greenhouse gas emissions. Mm. You don't need a carbon offset program if the truck simply turns its engine off sooner.
Right.
The EPA's SmartWay program explicitly correlates reduced truck idling with significantly lower localized emissions and vastly improved air quality around industrial facilities. You are physically stopping massive diesel engines from burning fuel while standing still.
It's so direct. But when we transition from the environmental data to the safety and driver experience data, the numbers become incredibly stark. The paper cites deep research from the FMCSA, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration. They track driver behavior and wait times across the country. They found that commercial drivers are detained at facilities on roughly 1 out of every 10 stops they make.
And when they are detained, they average 1.4 hours of waiting beyond the industry standard 2-hour loading window.
1.4 hours extra.
Put yourself back in the cab of that truck. As a commercial long-haul driver, you are governed by strict federal hours of service regulations. You only have a 14-hour daily window to work and a strict 11-hour limit on actual driving time. Every minute you spend sitting in a yard waiting for a clerk to find a piece of paper is a minute ticking off your federally mandated clock.
It is unpaid time that directly eats into your earning potential.
Exactly. You are literally trapped in the cab, watching your paycheck evaporate while someone searches a filing cabinet.
It has to be incredibly frustrating.
It is the primary driver of burnout and turnover in the industry, which in the long-haul sector chronically hovers near 90%. But more alarmingly, it is a massive public safety crisis. The FMCSA analyzed the correlation between detention time and highway accidents. They found that just a 15-minute increase in average dwell time at a facility raises the expected crash rate for that driver by 6.2%.
Wait, I want to make sure I understand the causality there. Why does waiting for 15 minutes in a parking lot cause a truck crash on the highway hours later?
It is entirely behavioral, driven by the pressure of the federal clock. If a driver loses an hour waiting for paperwork in your yard, they have to make up that lost time on the highway to hit their next delivery window or maximize their miles before they are legally forced to pull over and sleep.
So they speed.
Right. They drive slightly faster. They push through fatigue instead of taking a rest break. They take more aggressive risks in traffic. The FMCSA estimates that if we could drop the average detention time nationwide by just one single minute, it would prevent roughly 400 commercial crashes a year.
1 minute of safe time equals 400 prevented highway crashes. Wow. So when Yardflow argues that digitizing the front door and reducing the BOL from 9 pages to 6 improves the driver experience, they are not talking about making the driver smile.
Not at all.
They are talking about giving the driver their legal time back, stopping massive diesel emissions in local communities, and directly preventing fatal accidents on the highway. It is not ESG confetti. It is a hard operational result.
And that operational result, the clean, efficient digital flow of trucks and data, is the absolute prerequisite for feeding the software brain of the facility. Which brings us to the orchestration layer.
Yeah.
The YMS, or yard management system.
In theory, the YMS is the conductor of the orchestra. It's the enterprise software suite that looks at the entire facility, every truck, every trailer, every dock door, and makes optimized decisions. It says, okay, inbound truck A needs to go to dock door 3 and dispatch spotter truck B to pick up the empty trailer at door 7.
In theory, yes. A YMS is an incredibly powerful piece of software. But a software brain is entirely dependent on its nervous system. It can only optimize based on the data it receives. What happens if the data feeding that brain is terrible?
Right.
What happens if the truck's arrival time is only recorded when a guard scribbles it on a clipboard? What if the departure time is only logged when a clerk finally enters a wet signed piece of paper into a terminal an hour after the truck actually left? What if an exception, like a missing security seal on a trailer, is only communicated via a garbled walkie-talkie call?
If the underlying data is analog and delayed, the YMS is essentially flying blind. It is forced to, as the paper brilliantly puts it, hallucinate reality.
Yeah, it's trying to play a high-speed game of chess, but half the pieces on the board are invisible, and the other half are moving on their own without telling the system.
It's like a city spending $10 million on an absolute state-of-the-art supercomputer designed to predict local weather patterns with pinpoint accuracy. It has the best algorithms in the world. But the only sensor feeding data into the supercomputer is a guy named Bob standing on the roof, looking at the sky and yelling, "Looks a bit cloudy," into a walkie-talkie every couple of hours.
Exactly.
The supercomputer is useless because the input is garbage.
That analogy is perfect. The YMS cannot overcome the latency of physical paper. If it receives delete or inaccurate data, it will actively make bad decisions. It will dispatch a robotic spotter truck to a dock door that is still occupied by a human driver who got delayed signing paperwork. It will flag a trailer as empty in the system when it is actually full. It creates gridlock.
Which proves why the yard flow sequence of operations is absolute. You cannot jump to step three orchestrate without completing step two. You have to digitize the driver at the gate. You have to clean the custody trail by dropping the paper math from 9 pages to 6. You have to transform messy human noise into structured, instantaneous digital events.
Only then can the YMS stop hallucinating.
Right. Only then can it actually orchestrate the yard, dynamically assign doors, clear exceptions instantly, and enforce strict service level agreements. You have to fix the analog foundation before the digital roof can hold any weight.
Now, I know what many supply chain professionals listening to this might be thinking. This is all a very elegant theory. It looks great in a white paper. The math works out on a spreadsheet. But the real world is messy. The standardizing this human API and digitizing a few pieces of paper actually move the needle in a physical, chaotic yard.
And we don't have to guess, because the paper provides hard, field-validated data. We can look at a real-world deployment by Primo Brands, and the numbers are absolutely undeniable.
Primo Brands is a major enterprise player, and they approached this with a rigorous scientific method. They didn't just roll it out blindly. They ran a strict side-by-side pilot program at the exact same facility, operating under the exact same volume pressures on the exact same days.
The ultimate A-B test.
Exactly. They compared the baseline legacy workflow, the human guards, the clipboards, the walkie-talkies, the 9 pages of BOLs directly against the YardFlow digitized protocol.
And the operational results. Well, the critical metric here is the drop and hook turn time. That is the total amount of time it takes for a truck to enter the facility, drop off its current trailer, hook up a new outbound trailer, complete all legal paperwork, and exit the gate. Under the legacy paperwork flow, the average turn time was 48 minutes. Under the YardFlow digital protocol, the average turn time dropped to exactly 24 minutes.
They cut the time precisely in half.
And we can immediately translate those 24 saved minutes into hard freight economics.
Yeah.
The industry standard for these calculations comes from the ATRI, the American Transportation Research Institute. They produced a metric called the freight ruler, which calculates the marginal cost of operating a commercial truck.
Right.
When you factor in diesel fuel, driver wages and benefits, truck lease payments, maintenance, insurance, and tires, the marginal cost to keep a truck operating is roughly $90 per hour.
So let's break that down. $90 an hour means the truck costs $1.50 for every single minute it is operating. If you implement a workflow that saves 24 minutes of detention time, you are putting exactly $36 of hard truck and driver costs back into the freight ecosystem every single time a truck turns around in your yard.
$36 per turn. When you multiply that by hundreds of trucks a day across dozens of facilities in a network over 365 days a year, the macroeconomic impact is staggering. You are stripping millions of dollars of dead friction out of the system.
The direct cost savings are massive. But from an executive perspective, they're actually just a secondary benefit. The most profound operational impact of cutting that turn time in half is a concept YardFlow calls synthetic capacity.
This is the true holy grail of the entire paper. We need to explain exactly what synthetic capacity is because it completely changes how companies should view growth.
Okay, so after Primo Brands saw the results of the 24-minute turn time, they rolled the FlowDriver and FlowBow protocols out to 24 of their distribution sites. And here's what happened. By simply running this standardized digital layer over their existing physical footprint, those 24 sites were able to process and ship 5% more total freight volume.
5% more physical volume moved out the door. And they achieved that without buying an inch of new land, without pouring a single yard of new concrete to build more dock doors, without buying more forklifts, and with the exact same human headcount in the dock office.
That is realized production capacity. Let's contextualize how rare that is. Imagine you're the VP of logistics, and your CEO tells you that next year, the company needs to increase shipping throughput by 5% to meet market demand. Historically, how do you achieve that?
You rely on CapEx, capital expenditure.
Right. You tell the board you need $10 million to build a new warehouse wing. You need to go through local zoning permits to expand the yard. You need to lease 5 more spotter trucks and hire 15 more dock workers.
It takes 2 years and millions of dollars just to get that 5% bump.
Exactly. But what the Primo Brands data proves is that for most facilities, their actual binding constraint is not a lack of physical space or a lack of manpower. Their binding constraint is process variance and analog friction.
I see.
If a dock door is occupied by a truck for 48 minutes because the driver is inside searching for a wet signed piece of paper, that dock door can only handle roughly 10 trucks a shift. Mm. If you digitize the process and cut the turn time to 24 minutes, that exact same dock door can suddenly handle 20 trucks a shift.
You have literally doubled the throughput potential of your existing physical real estate. You manufacture massive operational capacity out of thin air simply by cleaning up the workflow.
It's the equivalent of finding a massive, fully staffed hidden warehouse inside your existing warehouse.
So, if you're listening to this, maybe you are a supply chain executive, or maybe you just love operational efficiency and you're realizing the immense power of synthetic capacity. The question becomes, how do you know if your specific yard is ready to achieve this? And perhaps more importantly, how do you navigate the internal politics of selling this deeply unglamorous process of fixing paper workflows to an executive board that is dead set on buying a shiny new robot?
That brings us to the final actionable phase of the yard flow thesis, the readiness index, and how to systematically dismantle executive objections. Because you cannot simply wake up one morning and declare your yard automated. You have to audit your baseline readiness.
Right. Yardflow provides a diagnostic tool called the Readiness Index. Before a company is allowed to even speak to a robotics vendor, they have to honestly score their operational maturity across 6 specific physical and digital flows. We have the driver flow, paper flow, dock flow, spotter flow, exception flow, and the automation runway.
And what is crucial to note is that the scoring system is not flat. They weight these flows based on how critical they are to enabling actual robotic autonomy. For example, driver flow and dock flow carry a base weight of 1. Spotter flow and exception flow carry a weight of 2. But paper flow and automation runway carry the maximum critical weight of 3.
Why is paper weighted so heavily? Like, why is the existence of a printed bill of lading considered a more critical roadblock to a robot than the physical layout of the dock door itself?
Because it represents a hard binary stop to a digital workflow. A robotic spotter truck can use advanced LiDAR and computer vision to navigate a complex, poorly designed dock layout. It can see a pothole and drive around it. But a robot absolutely, fundamentally cannot read or execute a wet signed carbon copy legal document. If your facility's legal chain of custody requires a human hand to hold a pen and sign a piece of paper, the robot cannot complete the transaction. Full stop. The paper flow is the data backbone of the custody transfer. If you have not digitized that custody, if you have not moved from the 9-page physical BOL down to the 6-page digital EBL, you do not have a deterministic runway. You can buy the robot, but it will just sit idle at the dock door, physically capable of moving the trailer, but legally waiting for a signature, it cannot process. Okay, so you run the readiness index audit, you score your facility, and you realize you have a massive amount of work to do. Your paper flow is a disaster, your driver journey is entirely manual, and your YMS is hallucinating. Now, you have to go into the boardroom and pitch this sequence of operations to the executive team.
Good luck.
Right. The Yardflow paper actually anticipates this, providing what they call sale-safe rebuttals for the most common corporate pushback. Let me put my cynical CEO hat on for a second. I want to throw these exact objections at you, and let's see how the methodology holds up. Are you ready?
Absolutely. Let's hear the objections. Okay, CEO hat is on. Look, I appreciate the deep dive into the weeds of the guard shack, but this all sounds like low-level administrative dizzy work. We already solved our technology problem. We spent $3 million on a top-tier yard management system last year. We have a YMS dashboard in the control room. We don't need to mess around with driver QR codes and paper digitization. Our software already handles the orchestration.
Okay, so if I am the supply chain leader, my response is, I am thrilled that we invested in a YMS, but we need to look at the reality of how it operates. Is that exact same YMS deployed universally across all 24 of our sites? Or is it a patchwork of different legacy systems pieced together through acquisitions? More importantly, what data is actually feeding that dashboard? A YMS is the execution brain of the yard, but it shouldn't be forced to piece together reality from wet signed paper, delayed walkie-talkie chatter, and manual data entry that happens an hour after a truck actually leaves. If we don't digitize the driver at the gate, and if we don't eliminate the physical paper BOL at the dock, our expensive YMS isn't orchestrating anything. It is hallucinating based on garbage data. We bought a supercomputer, but we're feeding it information via carrier pigeon.
Oh, that is a phenomenal pivot. You aren't attacking the software. You are exposing the data foundation. Okay, here's objection number two from the CEO. You're spending a lot of time talking about driver experience and preventing idling. Honestly, those are soft ESG metrics. Driver experience is a nice to have. Maybe we put it in the quarterly HR newsletter. But my mandate is to increase margin. We need to focus on hard ROI and freight economics, not making truck drivers happy.
Driver experience is not a soft metric. It is the absolute core of our freight economics. The long-haul driver turnover rate is hovering near 90%. When carrier drivers hit our yard and are forced to wait for 48 minutes instead of 24, they're burning their federally mandated driving hours. That detention time costs the broader trucking industry roughly $11.5 billion in lost productivity every single year. Carriers are not stupid. They track dwell times. When they know our yards are a black hole for their driver's time, they do one of two things. They either significantly raise our transportation rates to compensate for the lost time, or they simply refuse our freight. Improving the driver experience by speeding up the turn time is not charity. It directly lowers our inbound transportation costs and guarantees we have capacity when the market tightens. It's pure hard economics.
I love how you immediately tie a soft metric to the carrier's pricing algorithm. Okay, the final objection, and this is the big one driving the entire market panic. Listen, I just got back from a major logistics conference in Vegas. Every single one of our biggest competitors is buying driverless yard trucks and computer vision systems right now. If we spend the next 12 months messing around with QR codes and reducing 9 pages of paper to 6, we are going to fall completely behind the technology curve. We need to start buying robotics today to stay competitive.
If our competitors are buying robotics before standardizing their yard workflows, we should let them. We should encourage them to make that mistake. They are walking into the exact same trap that Tesla fell into in 2018 with the Model 3. And that Kroger fell into in 2025. If they buy a fleet of million-dollar driverless trucks and drop them into a yard that still runs on human walkie-talkies and paper BOLs, they haven't actually bought automation. They have just bought a very, very expensive participant in a broken process. Their robots will strand at the dock waiting for a wet signature. We're going to build the deterministic runway first. We're going to digitize the driver. We're going to clean the custody trail. And we're going to standardize our network. Once our yards are perfectly machine-readable, then we deploy the hardware. And on day one, our robots will immediately compound our efficiency while our competitors are still trying to figure out why their autonomous truck can't read a sticky note.
The logic is completely unassailable when you break it down like that. And it brings us perfectly to the ultimate conclusion of this entire deep dive, the true immutable order of operations for building the autonomous yard.
It is a strict sequence, and you simply cannot skip steps. First, the driver journey must become digital. You implement appless check-in and automated SMS instructions to build the machine-readable front door. Second, the legal custody transfer must become paperless. You eliminate the shipper's copy, dropping the BOL workflow from 9 pages of physical latency down to 6 pages of digital truth.
Right.
Third, once you have that clean data, your YMS steps in and actually orchestrates the movement of the yard without hallucinating. Fourth, you take that optimized protocol and standardize it across every single facility in your network. And fifth, only after the foundation is perfect, physical hardware automation compounds on top of it.
Audit, optimize, orchestrate, standardize, automate. It is such a clarifying framework. We live in an era that is completely intoxicated by the promise of artificial intelligence and robotic hardware. When things get difficult in our businesses, we are constantly, desperately looking for a machine to replace human labor, hoping that a shiny new piece of silicon will magically solve our deep underlying operational dysfunctions.
We always look for the quick fix.
Always. But I want to leave you with a lingering thought to ponder on your own after we wrap up today. If standardizing basic human communication, if something as remarkably unglamorous as digitizing a gate check-in and eliminating three pieces of printer paper can instantly generate 5% more production volume out of thin air, save hundreds of thousands of dollars, and prevent highway accidents, are we making a mistake by constantly looking for saviors in silicon when the ultimate superpower of a successful business is simply taking the time to design a better human workflow?
It is the fundamental question of the automation age. We all want the robot to be the hero of the story, but the real hero is doing the hard, boring work of standardizing the process.
Thank you for taking this deep dive with us today into the hidden mechanics of the global supply chain, the unexpected multi-million dollar power of paper math, and the true order of operations. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.